Pretty much exactly a year ago, I went to a talk put on by the Australian Land and Groundwater Association, and we always refer to it as ALGA. And in that talk, a lady from Liverpool Council spoke about the research she had done into bonded asbestos fragments in soil and what happens to them during normal activities like landscaping, mowing, or regular maintenance. After the talk, I went up to her and we exchanged contact details. And ever since then, she has been on top of the list of people I wanted to talk to in our podcast. Her name is Anna Serra. She works for Liverpool City Council. I contacted her. She had to get permission to speak to us. But all that got solved. We managed to get her on. We had a fantastic talk. And here it is.
Hi, Anna.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you going?
Good, thank you. I think it's the first time that I've met you, Jane.
We haven't met before. No.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Haven't had the pleasure. What's your accent?
Oh, what do you reckon?
I'm finding it a bit hard. I want to say South African, but I think I'm wrong.
You're not the first one saying South African. I'm from Portugal.
Portugal. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been in a few places and I have accents, but a little tiny pieces from different places.
James, you're about to be cancelled. You can't ask people what their accent is. What's wrong with you?
I asked it in a good way, didn't I? Oof. I love accents. I've always, ever since I was a kid, I'm obsessed with accents. I just love different accents and dialects and voices. It's great.
Anna, thank you. I can't tell you how excited we are to have you, because we have done two episodes on MulchGate, and I've read the ALGA position paper where it was proposed at least to deal with asbestos in soils in the same way how we deal with all other contaminants. Why is asbestos singled out? And one of the responses of the regulators was, we deal with Smarches and Trump, that default paper. And as long as that is in case and there's no other research, that stays. And I'm going, hang on a second here. I was at an ALGA talk where Anna spoke. And what are you talking about? There's no other research. I also know that Ross McFarland and Maycom have done some work in this. And I think even Phil Hibbs was involved in that. So in that ALGA talk, that was so exciting that someone had finally taken the bull by the horns and looked at impact of asbestos in soils on humans. What made you do that?
So we had approximately 5 years ago a huge problem in council. So I'm from Liverpool City Council, and I came in to take care of the asbestos and waste system, which is something that has to be governed in council, because there was no method and policies to deal with the POEO Act, Contaminated Lands Act, and all the regulations associated with it. There was a huge problem at the time because there were staff doing mowing and maintenance of parks, and they were concerned about the potential asbestos exposure due to fragments in the park. And it was getting into a level that it was difficult to try to solve the situation, and we had to think about it in the bigger picture. So unfortunately, there was a few numbers of parks that were identified, so we had a sample of 17 parks. Which is
okay, just
quite...
hang on. You're galloping ahead here.
I'm trying
to set the stage here first,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So you are from Liverpool Council, and I can't mention it often enough. Liverpool Council, thank you for doing this. This is unusual, to say the least. All right. So you had, if I understand you correctly, staff members, gardeners, maintenance workers who came across bonded asbestos fragments in soil and were worried. I can understand that.
Yes, illegal waste collection officers, so the staff that was collecting illegal waste, for example, maintenance of parks, civil construction, where they're doing footpaths, excavation, all operations staff were concerned about it.
And how did you end up with that baby? How did that end up on your lap?
That's a bigger story, but to cut it very short, council were ordered by the EPA because of our uncontrolled processes of management of soil. Very similar, to some extent, what's happening in the mulch debacle.
Okay. Did you put your hand up and say, okay, hey, I'm interested in this, or were you assigned by someone?
I was a one-man band at the time, so there was no one else to take care of that. And it landed basically on my lap.
And funds were put aside for you? Did you get a budget?
We have a budget, an annual budget, but there's usually not much budget for contamination remediation and all of the. But due to the concern of the EPA audit, this was considered a priority, of course. And there was also, I have to say, there was pressure from the union because they were speaking through their workers, and they really wanted to have some answers on that.
Brilliant. All right. So you set out a one-woman band, and you set out to do some research. Did you gang up with somebody,
Yes.
researchers? Did you get some help from some university or?
I wasn't the one who conducted the exposure risk assessment. It was Simon Butterfield from RiskTech. I think it's important for me to emphasize that. For many ways, it needed to be something done externally from council, so that has the third party independence. And we got occupational hygienists and a licensed asbestos who have experience in contamination of asbestos in soils, which is important.
Yeah.
And we've set up a plan with their assistance yet. Of course, I think it really helped me already being an LAA and having worked in the industry as a contaminated land scientist and did many, many contamination remediation, PSI, VSI. So I really had the knowledge of the process. And also an LAA, the part of the friable, non-friable air monitoring, exposure, static monitoring, all of that. We kind of join our heads together. And then by that time, when we set up things, also my manager was in place, Michael Zengowski, and we kind of put our heads all together and to try to organize what's the best way approach to deal with this. Because there was no data. The data was very rare. So we actually need to provide some clarity to the workers. How bad is this?
What can I say? Like, we all worry about when there's asbestos in soil, what's the biggest problem with it? The biggest problem is that it may release respirable fibers into the air, and we can't have that. So measuring how many fibers are in the air is actually something we can do very well. Dear Mulchgate, that may be an idea of something, of an approach on solving this issue, but I'm not going to go into it again. So, all right. Tell me more about the setup. What did you do?
So we selected 17 of the parks that we knew there was concerns about. We actually hired contractors to do the mowing jobs in the parks that we knew that there was asbestos in it and that they potentially would mow areas with asbestos fragments in it. So in those 17 parks, we did 68 exposure samples and 85 static samples. So static is we just put the monitor near a tree, near a fence. So it's static there and the mower goes up and down to do the regular maintenance activities. And the 68 exposures were within the mower or the person who were doing the whipper snipper. They would have it in the respirable area zone. And they were doing their regular work. So we were trying to do 8-hour shift works as a regular standard day. Of course, when you're doing the sampling, there's a few things technical that we have to consider because the 8-hour shifts, they're not only on that position. Sometimes we had to say, okay, because we're doing this park, you just have to mow it a few times up and down and all of those things, but we got sufficient data for a good pool of information.
If I understand that correctly, so your static measures were basically simulating the exposure to the public, right? Someone who was having a picnic nearby. That
Sitting
would be.
down, doing nothing, just standing around, just looking at what council was doing.
And the personal monitors were then were aimed at getting some risk assessment of the actual workers who would be at the forefront of it all.
Correct,
Okay.
correct.
What was the exposure? What was the, how should I put this? How much bonded asbestos was there? Was it visible on the surface or was it in the subsurface? Or how did you go about all this?
It depends on the parks and it depends on a lot of things. But when the staff was doing the mowing or the contractors were doing the mowing, we were doing a visual check all around it to see if we could see fragments. And there were a few occasions that we saw bits of fragments, I would say 10 fragments scattered throughout the park, or more than 10 in some occasions, less than 10, two, one or two. It really depended, really varied. And we were just assuming many things because there's many scenarios that can happen. We can have illegal dumpings. We can have someone that's doing a renovation in their house and just throws some material out from the fence. So one of the important things that we're trying to find out is where is the source of the material? Where this is actually coming from? And that is another part of what we're all doing at this particular point in time, where we're trying to assess what was the risk to users and workers.
All right. So spill the beans. It's 17 parks. How many AM monitoring results did you actually have?
So we had 153 samples that we did and analyzed. In all of that, we only have three samples that came up with asbestos fibers. The method by itself does not give us asbestos fibers. Some of the samples had to go for second testing or by scanning of electron microscope, so we can determine if the fibers were actually fibers or other type of fibers. And only three samples actually came out
So
with
sorry
it.
to interrupt. Yeah, that is one of the not problems, but this is one of the intricacies of air monitoring with regard to asbestos, that you basically you have a little pump on you and you run air, a known volume of air through a filter, and at the end of the day, you count the
Yes, the
fibers that you
fibers,
find
not
on
the
that
asbestos.
filter. They could be all sorts of fibers. They don't have to be asbestos fibers. If you are after the asbestos fibers, you need to then go into a further analysis and say, count the asbestos fibers.
Correct.
Okay.
And I really think also I should add that we did this where there was the fires and there was a very hot summer. It was really hot. The grass was extremely dry. So we had dust everywhere. And that is one of the worst conditions that we can do if we're looking for potential exposure, because being dry is much more airborne. And therefore, we were thinking we're going to get some bad results just because of the weather and the smoke and all of that. We were actually quite curious to see what came out with that. And only to have those three samples tested with asbestos really blowed our minds, because we were expecting just by background level much more.
Just a question and clarification for me. So there were three samples where asbestos was detected. Was that, when you say that, do you mean there were three samples where asbestos was detected above the relevant exposure limit? Just in total, just any kind
Zero
of
of the
detection.
samples were above the criteria for a control for asbestos safe work guidelines. So there two were in the limit, but none of them were actually triggering any need of action as per safe work guidelines. So they were
Unreal.
all
So
below.
three above zero, but none above the safe work guideline.
0.02, which is the level of control when you're doing a removal of asbestos works as per the guidelines. Yes.
That's really interesting.
Yes, it
Uh,
was really
and
interesting.
and if I may add, so we have activities that are, if you're going over it with a mower in a dry environment, these are outlier scenarios.
Correct.
When I saw your research, it was so fascinating to me because finally someone has some numbers to present, and I was begging you to actually somehow release this information, because once you release it, it may not get peer reviewed in Nature, but once it is officially published, it is something that I can refer to in my reports. So
I
I
would
will
love
refer
to.
to this podcast in my reports from now on.
I would love to have that, but it doesn't only depend on me. It has I think Liverpool is quite happy to have the outcome that we've been having in dealing with asbestos contamination in public land. And we are really happy and proud of what we've done. And I believe that Simon from Risk-O-Tech is also really happy to have come in this endeavor and happy with the results. You know that it requires for to be published something, it requires a little bit of huge time, and you have to be dedicated and precise and there's a bit of scrutiny, and I think the lack of time is what's stopping us.
Did you mention that the level of anxiety that you had actually got a really positive impact on your employees and your
It
workers?
was little steps, because we didn't do just this. We also did asbestos awareness to all the staff, where we actually tell exactly what is asbestos, what's the problem. So the big problem is first, you don't disturb it. And if you did to do disturb it, then you have to see the risk and employ the appropriate control measures. The fragment on the floor will not jump to your body and cause the damage by itself. There has to be more than that. There has to be physical, mechanical damage to the fiber boards, and that fiber has to be released, and it has to go precisely into your breathing zone area, precisely where your nostrils are, and then they're not going to pick up by the your nose protections and your body protections, which actually they have ways of expelling. But this is all technically, but it's important for people to understand how the process works so they can be protected and can protect themselves better. So once we did that, and overall we increased the communication, we're always responsive, and that all of it together, we brought them into our conversations. We told them that what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, were they okay with it, how can it be better, and it was really a good journey with everyone. So I definitely cannot take the credit only for that, because everyone else was really helpful. All of those things, the increased communication, receptiveness, the being proactive, I think all of that has a huge, huge increase in the acceptance and understanding of what was going on. And I think that's amazing.
Again, Liverpool Council, well done. Truly, this is exemplary on so many
Yeah,
fronts.
this sort of thing really isn't done much anymore. So yeah, I also, I'm not as familiar with your work, Anna, as Gunnar is, but I'm intrigued as well. I think it's brilliant. And I just want to congratulate you and council for supporting it, because it's just council's actually sort of putting themselves out there and actually funding new research like this. It just doesn't happen. So it's amazing that you've done that.
Yeah, it's very difficult, because at the end it's ratepayers' monies, and it's difficult to justify these things if people don't understand. And
Yeah.
there's so many things that we need to spend money on, and illegal dumping, there's been such an issue, and remediation, which is an issue. And but yeah, we're getting there slowly. I think so.
Yeah.
Can you disclose how much your budget was? How much did you spend on that research, roughly? Or if you don't want to say, don't say.
At the moment, yes, I can't seem to, but the research itself, it was not that much, but within the integrated scheme of everything else that we had to do, that came up with a big budget. And because we had to do asbestos awareness, because we had to do site investigations, because it doesn't stop only here. This by itself, although it was 17 parts and it was quite extensive, it had a lot of samples, and all of those cost money. In the big scheme of things, it was totally worth it. I don't think it was cost benefit. It was not that expensive. And one of the things that I'm really always very passionate about when I talk about this is there's not enough funding to deal with contamination land for councils or for people that inherit the problem. And it's always one of the things that I try to alert with the EPA. We need more funding. We need more resources. We need more research. We need more investigation. It's really
Absolutely.
interesting.
This is a little bit off track, but it's certainly a personal view of mine. I share your opinion there. There's just not enough money going around to support research in these areas that's solely needed. And I always come back to the waste levy myself. Only 10% of the waste levy is actually returned to the EPA for grant schemes and funding and that sort of thing. 90% of it goes into consolidated revenue, never to be seen again. So there's such a big opportunity for New South Wales government to just take another 10% of that. That's $80 million a year, roughly. Feed that back into good research like what you're doing, and we could know so much more about these issues we deal with every day.
The podcast is a very brilliant idea, because we all have these issues bubbling around that we want to talk to people and about it, and you just want to think about it. I have so many ideas that you can explore if you want to hear me.
You're welcome anytime, Anna.
Should we talk Mulchgate or just briefly?
Briefly, I think briefly, because by itself.
Let's take it back to science. Based on your findings, Anna, is there anything to worry about with Mulchgate?
The panic that has been generated is not compatible to the risk that it is. So it's not. Thank you.
What a brilliant sentence that was. I did not warn you about this question, but man, this was it. Yeah,
Because
right.
we think about this all the time, because we were thinking maybe we should do maybe we should inspect all of our mulch sites to see if we found something. And I go, do we really want to go and inspect all parks? Because how can we guarantee that it's actually from the mulch? They might be from something else. You opening a can of worms. Fortunately, because we had so much issues already with EPA and making sure we're using the correct resources and materials and not recovering material, we're creating our own mulch in Liverpool. So we know that the mulch that we use is not contaminated. We also did a few site inspections just to make sure, particularly in areas that we didn't do or we had contractors doing it, because at the end of the day, we still have to provide information to residents. And if this is a concern from residents, we need to have data to present to them. So yes, we've checked the mulch. In this case, no, we haven't found anything in particular. I know that a school in Liverpool has found some material, but it was within the Department of Education and not within our management areas. But we had to go and look for the information, look if we had certificates, who do we get the mulch from? All that data and preparation has to be accounted for the future if anyone asks for it. But everyone that knows that works in the industry knows exactly what that means and how it happens. And it's quite, it needs to be thought about openly about this.
I just love information like this. I love good science like this. I just, like I said, I just don't think there's enough of it being done. But particularly a regulator taking the lead. So again, I'm stunned, and I think it's really great. Your study isn't published yet. How
No,
do
it's
we
not
access the
published. It was
information?
not meant to be published. It was basically just to provide us internal knowledge of what we're going to do for the next step. No one expected the results to be so low, and we're just so happy that it kind of by itself, that's it. We didn't, for this particular study, we didn't, of course, we continued to do the other things that we need to do, but we were quite happy. This served the purpose. And yeah, I have a thought about publishing it. Actually, Gunnar, when I did a presentation, that was the first thing that he asked me, is this going to be published? Where is it published? I said, well, I didn't thought about that actually at all. So we were kind of toying with that idea, and I think it's still possible, but everything happened so fast, it's quite tricky. It is a good sample, 17 parks would be sufficient sample. I think, for example, the mulch scenario would be amazing to have a monitoring done in those days. But again, it's a different scenario because there's no physically mowings going through the area. There's no potentially cause of damaging of the bonded fragments, which was a
So it's even
concern for
less
us.
likely that you have an impact. That's what I'm trying. We all know that.
Sorry, I was just going to say it's a great sample set. I can never say the name right. Schwartz's and Tromp, even that paper, it was such a small data set. It's just brilliant, that data. I would definitely, I'm with Gunnar. I would love to see that in a published paper somewhere that we can refer to, at least to kickstart that conversation of, about what is the risk, and support maybe some changes that we want to make around, this kind of zero tolerance position, and just having something a little bit more realistic for us to work with.
I'll definitely call Simon and have a chat about that again because I agree with you. It's absolutely worth it. One of the questions that we had is that are the mowers or the mows or the blade that cut the grass actually damaging the fragment? When we found out that the mowers were going through and we would check, oh dear, they just went through a fragment. Let's check the fragment. So we saw that the fragments did not have any recent damage in it. Because if you do asbestos and you kind of break a piece, they're different in color, in the way the texture, the dirt in it, it's different. So there was actually no scrapes or anything that damaged. And we thought about, okay, so this is actually a good thing. And it happened in a few of the occasions that we were doing. So we kind of thought, having the blades at 2.5 or 3 inches from the ground, then we're kind of sure that unless it's a huge fragment that's vertically put on the ground and you're kind of going through it, they're not going to damage the fragments anyway. So from now on, all our mowers, all our blades will be set at 2.5 to 3. There's no point of going any lower because at the maintenance, it's really not a concern. And if there's any fragments, they will go through them and will not cause any mechanical damage in sufficient way that can actually cause airborne fibers to be released. It's logical. You kind of think about it. Yeah,
It
it kind
is.
of makes sense.
Someone has to put the data together, and you did. Well done. If you had another grant, someone comes up with a lot of money, what's the next steps you would like to research?
The next one that I'm working on is related to the capping of 0.5 meter of soil in contaminated sites. Does it have to be clay in an area where we only have asbestos fragments? Because as a council, we have to do remediation in a lot of sites, and we don't have money to get half of clay on top of all the sites that potentially have fragments in it. Not only that, good material, venom, any material, it's very difficult to find. And as you talked about in the previous podcast, it's difficult to source, difficult to track, expensive, and it's becoming rarer by the minute. So what are the options when we have auditors? So we already have a trial in a few locations that we're trying to assess.
You let us know the moment you have something worth or talking about, and you will be back before you know it. Thanks so much. I so enjoyed this. I know this wasn't easy for you. You had to get permission first,
Yes.
that took on probably more time than the interview itself. Anna, congratulations on your research. Congratulations to Council for doing it and for being leaders in that area. It's really exciting.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. There's people who know what they're doing. They just don't have enough resources. It's a tough industry out there. Now, thank you so much for your time and for being able to listen and give me more hope that we should definitely get this out and be published.
Yes.
Thank
Bye,
you so
Anna.
much. Bye.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, how was that?
Hey, yeah, it was good.
You were texting in the middle of our
Oh,
podcast. Can't you even stop working when we are recording?
I had to answer James, sorry.
I know. But that was cool.
Yeah.
Let's just summarize this. So they had 17 parks where they monitored 100, was it 150 samples? Doesn't
More than
matter.
150.
150 some air monitoring samples, and these samples were on stationary nearby where the mowing work was done, and also on the workers. Of these 154 samples, they had three samples with a positive detection of asbestos fibers, but below the safe work guidelines for exposure. In a scenario that was just about as apocalyptic as it gets. You run a spinning rotor blade over brass area where on the surface you have some bonded
Yes.
asbestos fragments lying there.
In
In a
extremely dry conditions.
nightmare scenario, definitely worst case scenario, and you get basically no release of fibers, which is really amazing if you think about it, because they will get sucked up and thrown out
If they're
into
loose in
the
the soil already, yeah.
Great research. Loved it. And loved
Yeah.
even more so that Liverpool Council was a driving force here.
Yeah, good
Well,
on them.
driving force. The EPA forced them to do it, but that was good. That was definitely.
Yeah, we need to celebrate good research like that. The more information we have about this stuff, the better. And, this isn't about downplaying risk or anything like that. This is about having good, solid research and information so that we can make the best decisions that we can.